From the Sacred Kiss Studios in Canada, this is That Reporter Kid Space.
You are gonna like it!
All right, everybody, Cassius Morris, aka That Reporter Kid, here for That Reporter Kid Speaks. I am here with Aaron Camaro from the Despicable Geek podcast. How's it going?
Hey, it's going great. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. I'm feeling a little bit sick today, I guess you could say, but it's fine. I'm always in the mood to podcast. And it right seems on. Like you guys are too, because the Despicable Geek podcast has like an episode. Is it once a week?
It is every single week we come out with a new one.
Is that hard to maintain with jobs and all that since you guys are adults?
Yeah, it sure is. It really is sometimes. You know, we try to do our best to stay ahead of the game as much as we can and, you know, be as prepared as we can. So that way, if something comes up, we always got a backup plan. But, you know, when the show is new every single week, it's pretty tough. You know, it'd be one thing if you could do it every single day and that was your job, mm-hmm. you know, and that was all you did, you know, and that would be ideal because then we could put everything into it. But as it goes, you know, the best we can do right now, because we have, of course, lives outside and bills to pay and everything else to do, that, you know, it's tough to do it once a week, but we made the pledge we were going to do it, and I'm glad we're doing it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's great. I've never actually made a set day or time or whatever for my podcasts. I just release them. So, you know, it's pretty hard doing two, and I could never do one every week with both. So I just try to release them whenever. What's that?
I said it's a heck of a commitment.
Definitely is. I mean, it's crazy, and I can't even imagine being, you know, an adult with a job and all that kind of stuff doing a podcast, but it's great that you guys manage it, and I really enjoy the show.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, we've gotten a lot of great response to what we're doing, and I think, you know, the fact that we do it every week has got a lot to do with that because, you know, I don't know. I think nothing wrong, not taking anything away from doing it like once a month or not having a set time, because that's cool too, because you have to do it by your schedule. But when we decided that we were going to do it very, you know, take it real serious, then doing it every single week became the obvious thing to do.
Yeah. Is that something that was kind of ingrained in you from working in radio?
I don't know, because at the point when I started doing Decibel Geek podcasts, I hadn't worked in radio in quite a while since then.
Okay.
And, you know, and with radio, it's day to day. You know, I used to have a new show prepared every single night, but that was my job. So, you know, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah. So since we're on the topic of the Decibel Geek podcast, do you want to tell everybody like kind of what it's about and give a little synopsis, if you will?
Well, the Decibel Geek podcast is something that my co-host and I, Chris Zinczak, came up with. Actually, he came up with the whole scheme, the whole idea, and I hopped on just shortly thereafter. But what it is we have a weekly show. It's the Decibel Geek podcast. We play hard rock, heavy metal. We talk about rock history. We basically cover it all. If it's got loud guitars and it's rock and roll, you're probably going to hear about it on the Decibel Geek podcast. The cool thing about it is, we try to be funny, you know. Well, we don't try. It just kind of ends up happening to us most of the time. But we try to be entertaining. We try to be informative at the same time. Yeah. So especially some of my favorites, and I know a lot of the listeners' favorite shows, is the year in review shows from the past. Yeah. And I take a lot of pride in those shows, too, because I feel like, you know, it's a lot of fun going back and looking at those times. But to really break it down in a historical show like that, you know, it comes off as being something that a kid could maybe study, you know, and say, you know, I have to do research on the year 2000, let's say, you know, and you might have a report you have to do in school. Well, you can use the Decibel Geek podcast for that, because we really try to stick to our facts. And, you know, it's all about the music. Fans love it. We love doing it. And, you know, as long as that keeps going, we'll keep going.
That's awesome. And yeah, I really do like the year in review shows, because it's kind of weird for me. I think the last one, one of the last ones you guys did was like 87. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, we did 87.
I wasn't even around. So to hear about that.
I was going to say for a young fellow like you, it must be very informative.
It is. And I really enjoy them.
Nice. Well, yes. We appreciate that everybody's digging it, because we're having fun doing it.
Sweet. So since we're on the topic of the podcast, how did you and Chris meet?
Well, actually, it was good old Craigslist. I happened to find somebody advertising. I don't think I was looking for that. I think Craigslist is the kind of thing, like, it doesn't hurt to look at it once in a while, you know, and just to see what's out there. And that's what it happened to be. I just had nothing to do at the moment and thought, well, I'll get on Craigslist, see what people are looking for. And I saw that, you know, and it was him advertising that he was looking for a co-host for a rock podcast. Now, I don't listen to podcasts, to be totally honest with you. The only podcast I'd ever really listened to was the occasional wrestling one, if it was an interview with somebody I knew or something like that. Mm. So, you know, it piqued my interest thinking, you know, well, what is a podcast? Well, to me, a podcast is an internet radio show, you know? And so, you know, and if I talk to a podcast, well, it's not that simple, you know?
Yeah.
But to me, in the way I see it, it is. So I ended up going over to Chris's house, meeting him. Our mobile producer, Mark Bullard, was there, and I got to meet both those guys. And I think they were pretty impressed with me, and I was pretty impressed with the ideas that Chris had going on and stuff. And so we talked about doing it, and we just sat down one day and did it. You know, we got together. We did a pre-show one time, and that might be a special treat for the listeners on down the line. Maybe episode 100 will release the pre-show test, because that's some pretty funny stuff on there.
Cool. That's awesome. It's like the pre-interview, but like the fate of the position is at stake.
Exactly. You know, so it was, I stepped in at just the right time, you know, and I think Chris and I work really well together. I'm a little more out there. Chris is a little bit drier than I am, but together it works out pretty good. It's almost like, you know, he's the professor and I'm just along for the ride having a good time. You know, a lot of times, even with Kiss stuff, you know, and as big of a Kiss fan as I pride myself on being, I have to look to him and say, did you know about that? And he's like, oh yeah, everybody knows about that. So, you know, he adds a whole lot to the show.
Cool. And my dogs aren't adding anything to the show, but they're barking in the background. So sorry, guys. I was expecting that. So about the podcast, what has been your favorite episode to do so far, or funnest?
Oh, man. The most fun? I don't know. They've all been pretty fun. I really enjoyed the one with Steve Cornell, because that was an education for me. Because a lot of times when you go into an interview, not always do you know, you know, the person you're interviewing real well. Sure, I knew he was in Wicked Lester, and, you know, I'd heard that album. But other than that, I really didn't know too much about Steve Cornell. But that's, we always try to pride ourselves on Decibel Geek to not so much interview, but to have more of a conversation, you know? And so then if you don't really know that much about your subject through the conversation, you end up learning a whole lot. And I learned a whole lot about Kiss and in the early days and, you know, years before Kiss. And I think a lot of the listeners, you know, are Kiss fans and can appreciate that as much as I can. So that one was fun. I love the year in review shows. Those are the ones I get a kick out of going back and listening to later. Because while you're doing it sometimes, you know, and you can probably relate to this doing a podcast and all the many Kiss shows that you're involved in, when you're doing the show, sometimes it kind of blurs past you.
Yeah.
And then when you're done and you go back and listen to it, you kind of get a chuckle out of it because you really pick up on all the things you missed because your mind's going, you know, 100 miles an hour while you're trying to figure out what to say next, the conversation and all that. So just like radio, podcasting's a challenge, but back to the favorite shows, they've all been great. Loretta Caravella, she was really fun. I like that one because that was really a conversation. Because honestly, with her, we're all Eric Carr fans, you know, Chris and I both. But talking to her, you know, it wasn't like talking to the person themselves. We're talking to his sister. But she was so cool and so funny and had such great stories to tell and was so easy to converse with. That, you know, that's one of my favorite ones too. And I go back and I listen to the early ones and I think, boy, we've really progressed as we've come along. But still, as choppy as it was at first, I really liked the Loretta Caravella interview.
Yeah, that was cool.
All of them have been good.
Yeah, they have. I don't think I've even missed one episode. So I'd definitely be able to, you know, weigh in.
I appreciate that. I really do.
No problem.
And I know you've helped us spread the word as well. So, you know, always thank you to that.
It's my pleasure. So something I want to talk about.
You, my friend, are a true decibel geek.
Yeah, geek of the month.
Of the year.
So we, as much as we live in like different universes, kind of, we have a lot in common in the kind of music we listen to. So I want to know how you got, I guess, what was your exposure to rock and metal music? I know it's a big question.
Well, you know, and you talk about being universes apart, but really, I grew up in central Wisconsin, which I got to imagine can't be too much different than Canada. So we're not that far off. But yeah, you're definitely right about liking the same kind of music, because I know, you know, you dig some really cool stuff. And, you know, and with you, man, let me tell you, it makes me feel good about our chances for the future. That, you know, I think about you and all you do with your podcasting and involved in KISS stuff, and, you know, got the interview with Eric Singer. That's so awesome. And, you know, it makes me have hope for the future that young kids, the next generations, you know, are still going to love rock and roll the way we did and keep it alive. But as far for me, the way I got turned on to it was I had cool aunts and uncles. And I grew up, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, and was listening to my aunts and uncles' records, the LPs they had. And I had my Aunt Pam, and she had stuff like The Kinks and Nazareth and Judas Priest and Meatloaf she had. And she had KISS, double platinum. And on all them albums, it was like double platinum was it for me. I loved it. You know, and I couldn't even really, from the album, you know, it opened up. If I don't know if you've ever seen the album, but the inside has got like embossed pictures of them. And, you know, so I didn't even really know too much about what KISS was even about. It was just the music really grabbed me. So then I also had an uncle named Bruce, and he was into everything. He was into Sabbath and KISS and Ozzy and, you know, you name it. If it was good music, he had it on record. And after a while of going over to his house, he actually bought me, I think, KISS Alive 2.
Nice.
And I had just a couple of KISS records. And, you know, I was really young. All my friends weren't listening to this kind of music. It just so happened that, you know, they had it. I heard it, fell in love with it, and was really young. So then I get into school, and while all the kids that I'm in class with are really into, like, Duran Duran and Michael Jackson and, you know, Cyndi Lauper and the pop songs, Madonna, stuff like that, I'm this young kid listening to, you know, Iron Maiden and, you know, all these great metal bands. So yeah, from there, it was just like, it kind of became my identity, because I was the young kid who was the, you know, I had an Ace Frehley t-shirt in the sixth grade, you know, and none of the other kids in my class were wearing rock t-shirts then. But after that, you know, it was just, it became my thing, you know, and I love rock and always have. And, you know, I had fortune to be in some bands that never went anywhere and got to work on radio as a rock DJ and had a really successful run there. And, you know, it just kind of, rock and roll has always been a part of me, and I've embraced it. And, you know, it brought me to where I am today with the Decibel Geek podcast. And I'm loving it still.
All right, sorry about that. I look out my window and there's some guy leaving our driveway. So I don't know what that's all about, but.
Oh. At least you got good dogs that are warning you.
Yeah. Okay, so we're back, folks.
Here, I got a funny story about barking dog. I was, you know, and it's funny because, you know, you do podcasts. I'm sure you're probably just sitting in a room at your house, but when people listen to the radio or they listen to a podcast, they think, you know, oh, they're in some studio there. So they're in a big studio somewhere or, you know, something like that. But, like, even Chris and I, we say, oh, the Decibel Geek Studios. Mm-hmm. In reality, it's just a room in his house. But, one time I was here working with a guy on some wrestling videos, and we were calling the matches, and my dog started barking, and instead of stopping the video, this guy, like, he intertwined the dog into what we were talking about. Like, he all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he was giving me a dog as a gift, and I was just like, what am I supposed to do with this thing? You know, and then the dog, my dog, ended up becoming an ongoing character in the wrestling show we were working on because he would show up from time to time.
that kind of nice, reminds me of a... Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the, what was it? I listened to the Todd Glass podcast, and when I first started listening, there was this thing. They actually do have a studio, so this is even weirder. They would play, right, in the middle of a podcast, the sound effects guy would just play this effect of this dog barking, and Todd, the host, would be into it right away and say, hold on, get up, and you just hear in the background screaming, shut up, then he'd come back. So I guess, you know, I wouldn't be faking it if I didn't have to, but, you know, I guess that was his choice.
Now, if we all had studios, we'd have to pretend we were doing it from our kitchens.
Yeah, like from the kitchen studio.
That makes sense.
Yeah, hey, I'm even open about it in the COTN intro. I say from the basement broadcast center. It's now moved to my room, but not much difference.
Still the broadcast center.
Yeah. So who are some of your favorite bands growing up and now?
Let's see. Growing up, it was Kiss. Always Kiss for me. Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath. I listened to my dad's records a lot. He had Zeppelin, The Doors. I love The Doors. You know, got a little bit older. It was Guns N' Roses, Skid Row, Poison, you know, Enough's Enough, always like. Ugly Kid Joe, we just got to interview Whitfield Crane not too long ago. That was pretty cool for me because I loved Ugly Kid Joe ever since they first came out, and they broke up and were gone, and then they came back. And here, you know, all these years later, I'm interviewing Whitfield Crane on the Decibel Geek podcast, asking him every question I could ever think to ask the guy, you know. And if you think about that, for being a fan for all those years, you know, there's a lot of questions you rack up over the years. You know, imagine getting to sit down with Gene Simmons and just ask him everything you ever wondered about Kiss.
Yeah.
How cool that would be.
Being humble and answering everything.
And being totally open and honest like Whitfield Crane was, you know, and so that was pretty cool. You know, that's the kind of thing, the podcast that I dig too, is that, you know, something like that could almost go down in history as, you know, if you need to know something about Ugly Kid Joe and you listen to that episode of the Decibel Geek podcast, you're going to learn everything there is to know pretty much about that band, because mm-hmm. we covered it really good that night. And we try to pride ourselves on knowing what's going on, you know. And even like when we interviewed Vixen, you know, and I'm not the biggest Vixen fan in the world, but, you know, we knew what was going on enough to carry on a good conversation with them. And, you know, we do the Radio Sucks radio shows, and it's funny because I just got done reading not too long ago an article about a couple of goofball radio DJs trying to interview Paul and Tommy from Kiss and mess it all up. Have no idea what they're doing. You know, have no idea that, you know, they should be respectful because, hey, this is Kiss you're talking to here. You know, and maybe you're not their biggest fan, but there's a lot of people out there that are big fans that do want to hear these guys talk when they're coming to your town on your radio station. You know, and those jokers totally blew it, you know? So that's the difference, you know? And those are all my favorite bands. And if I can interview every single one of them, you know, just like we did Jack Russell, a Great White. I love Great White, you know, and all the other bands we've interviewed and talked to are, a lot of them are either my favorite bands or after we talk to them, you know, they become my favorite bands. And that's the cool thing about the podcast too. You know, of all the stuff I like nowadays, I'm always learning new stuff by doing this show with Chris, because Chris is always turning me on to stuff and vice versa. And the fans too, through the Facebook page and through responses to the show, you know, that's the beautiful thing about it. And we've been calling it, you know, it's our little music scene with a worldwide audience. You know, it's us, you know, it's a hard rock and heavy metal fans. It's one group of us together, you know, but we're spread out throughout the entire world. So when we're all conversing, we're all talking, we're all turning each other on this stuff, you know, nothing but good can come from that, you know? So everybody keep it up. You're turning me on new music all the time. You know, I got the new Kiss album. I love that, you know, talking about current stuff. Looking forward to next year when Sabbath comes out with a new album.
Yeah.
Queens of the Stone Age, one of my favorite bands, they're coming out with new stuff in 2013. So a lot of stuff currently to look forward to, but we always cover everything, you know, and that's just it. But it's, like I said, if it's got loud guitars and it rocks, I probably love it.
How crazy is that? That, I mean, when did Black Sabbath come out? In the late 60s?
Yeah.
To say that they're coming out with a new album next year in 2013, like, even for me, that's crazy to even hear that.
Well, you know, and there was a time back in, I think, the early 2000s, maybe mid-2000s, where they got back together, and the way it worked, I think it was like a best-of album, but they went back into the studio for two new songs, and I can't think of the name of the songs, but they were good tunes, and that was the last time they ever recorded anything together, so this is going to be pretty special. It's going to be pretty awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's so cool. And it's too bad that they only did, like, what they do, one reunion date when they were supposed to do, like, a little tour?
Yeah, I know. I would have loved to have seen it.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, it's kind of like Kiss.
I got to see Sabbath reunited in 97 on that Ozfest tour, and that was mind-blowingly good. It was really awesome.
Oh, wow. I haven't even been able to keep up with all the Ozfests.
Yeah, there's been a few of them over the years. You know, I say 97 like it was yesterday to me.
Yeah. Can you take us back to your first concert? I know you touched on it a little bit on your podcast, but I'd like to hear about it.
Let's see. My first concert. Boy, what would it have been? Probably something when I was little. The first concert I really remember too that I like went to on my own, you know, without my parents, without no aunts or uncles, just me and some friends going to, was Kiss on the Revenge Tour in Madison, Wisconsin.
Nice.
With Great White and Trickster opening up. That was I think my first real show.
Wow, that must have been great.
It was great. I mean, we went in there, I didn't know what to expect. It was, you know, we drove to Madison. It was at the I believe it was called the Dane County Coliseum. And it was a pretty decent sized place, you know, and we got there early and it was cold. I remember it was wintertime in Wisconsin, so it was really cold. But we waited in line, you know, we had our tickets and it was just general admission. So they let us in and we all ran, you know, as soon as we got through the gates, we ran right up to the barricade and I grabbed a hold of it for dear life. And then all these people slowly started shuffling in. So it was like you could lighten up a little bit. And then eventually Trickster came out and then, you know, it was all light and nobody was pushing or shoving or nothing. And it was cool. And then Great White came out and it got a little bit tighter and then Kiss came out and I was pretty much crushed on the barricade. And it was a rough experience. And they kept saying, you know, why don't you go to the back? Why don't you go to the back? And I was like, no way. Yeah. I'm not going nowhere. You know, so I stayed up front the whole time and my ribs were banged up pretty bad for a while, but I never told my parents, you know, that I'd gotten hurt at the show because they would have been upset and probably not let me go on my own again.
Yeah. Well, now if they listen to this, no.
Yeah, I was going to say, if my mom and my dad are out there listening to this, you know, I'm busted. You know?
Yeah. No more concerts for you after this.
Yeah, that's it. They're going to make sure I can't go to anymore.
It seems like they've been, Kiss has been doing more indoor seats, like seated place, like amphitheaters and stuff. I wonder why that is.
Well, you know, I think for a band, it's got, you know, there's two options to it. You know, for example, one time we went to a show and it was Cheap Trick, Papa Roach, and Hinder. But it stormed really bad. I mean, it was raining like crazy. It was like a monsoon that day. And, you know, Cheap Trick ended up canceling out. And the other two bands had to come out and play acoustic sets, which were cool because, you know, they didn't expect they were having to do it. And they came out and pulled it off. I got a new respect for Papa Roach that day. I never really cared for him much before then. But that night I got a new respect for him. But, you know, it's that with Kiss, imagine, you know, it's not just a couple of guys and their guitars. You know, there's a whole lot of electricity going on at the Kiss show, you know, a whole lot of stuff. So they can't really, you know, if it rains, they're done. They can't play at all, period, I would imagine. So that's probably got something to do with it. And the other fact, too, is that I don't know about other places in the country, but I know around here, a lot of the amphitheaters, the outdoor places have kind of closed down. And I'm not sure why that is, but we used to have a great one here in Nashville. It was called the Starwood Amphitheater. And Kiss, I'd seen Kiss there. I'd seen Poison there. Boy, seen a bunch of bands there. Seen Pearl Jam there. They put on a really good show. I was surprised. Wasn't a big Pearl Jam fan before I saw them live that night either. Isn't that funny how sometimes, you know, you're not a big fan of a band, but then you see them live and then it changes your attitude? I've had that happen to me a few times, Pearl Jam that night. But that Starwood Amphitheater, they've closed down, and there's always been rumors of it coming back. But, you know, they're always working on it, something out there in the fields, and you can never see from the road what they're doing, so it's not back yet. But, you know, it's tough. I like the outdoor shows. I actually prefer those quite a bit.
Yeah, I've had both, and I don't know. I like them both equally, but I'd say the outdoor shows have a little bit of an edge for me because that was my first concert. So I'm kind of biased towards that.
Yeah. What was your first show?
Kiss.
Yeah. Right on.
Cool. 2009, a Live 35 tour.
Excellent.
Yeah. It was really good. And actually, you were saying how the one amphitheater closed down in Nashville there. Nothing. There's no amphitheaters here. The only concert venue that we have that's indoor that anybody would consider going to is a place called the Halifax Metro Center, and it's been around since the, I'd say late 70s, early 80s, and they have not ever done any renovations. So it's like an old hockey rink, pretty much.
Nice.
But that's it. And then we have the Common, which is where I saw Kiss, and then we have the Forum, which is an actual hockey rink, so nobody goes there.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
That's actually where. Yeah, that's actually where Kiss opened the Love Gun Tour.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Yeah. So people used to go there, but I guess not anymore.
Got a little piece of Kiss-tory in your town. I like that.
Yeah. What would you say was your parents' reaction to you getting into rock and metal?
You know, with my parents, it was, you know, and you got to remember, these are different times. You know, this is back when, you know, Ozzy Osbourne was still, you know, people were scared of him and his music, you know, and everybody thought that he worshiped the devil and, you know, was going to corrupt every kid's minds and stuff. And my dad, like I said, he had a lot of albums, had a lot of Sabbath, a lot of Zeppelin, The Doors, The Beatles, Stones, you know, stuff like that. Boy, he had a lot of cool records. I'm thinking back, Steppenwolf. I mean, he had a lot of stuff. And when it was my turn then to start buying my own albums, I would buy them from my Uncle Bruce. Because like I said, he had that massive LP collection. But at that time, this newfangled thing called cassettes were coming out. So he was like, oh yeah, these cassettes, you know, these are the wave of the future. I'm done with LPs. You know, I'm going to replace all my LPs with cassettes. So if you want to buy them from me, you know, I'll sell them to you. So I would do any work I could around the house, you know, anything I could do to earn some money. And I'd go over there and my Uncle Bruce would sell me LPs for $1 a piece. And so, you know, it was all fine. You know, he gave me the Kiss ones because he knew I was a huge Kiss fan, gave them to me. And then little by little, I just would have to judge by the album covers, you know, if it was cool or not. So I'd get the Maiden and stuff like that. And my mom, she was always cool, whatever, let me listen to anything I wanted to, you know, made sure I understood that. You know, it's just music. It really doesn't mean anything. You can't read too much into the lyrics and just enjoy it for what it is. And my dad was cool with it until one day I brought home an Ozzy album. And my dad was like, you know, he didn't put two and two together. He said, you know, I don't really know how comfortable I am, you know, with you listening to Ozzy. I said, but why? You know? Well, this is the guy, he bites heads off of animals and, you know, he worships the devil. And, you know, I hear all these terrible things about him and it's, you know, it's really probably nothing you should be listening to. And I said, but Dad, I've been listening to your Black Sabbath albums all these years. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, I feel like Ozzy Osbourne is the lead singer of Black Sabbath, you know, and I don't think my dad ever knew that. You know, he just listened to the music. And he was like, oh, well, okay then. You know, there was nothing you could say about it after that. And, you know, as it turned out, Ozzy didn't warp nobody's minds or make anybody kill themselves or anything like that. So it all turned out fine in the end. But my parents were always really cool and open about what I listened to. But they made sure I knew that, you know, you can't listen to a song and say, oh, I'm going to be like that. Because in the end, it's just a song. Anybody can write a song about anything. You know, and that really rings true, I think, with rap music. You know, and guys, you know, that may be rapping about going out and robbing liquor stores and, you know, shooting up parties and stuff like that. You know, and somebody listens to that and says, oh, man, that's cool. I want to be like that. Well, you can't be like that because the guys writing the songs half the time aren't even like that. They're just, you know, embellishing on a story. So if you take something like that seriously, you know, it's going to steer you down the wrong path. You know, you just listen to music for its enjoyment. For, you know, escapism, you know, a lot of times in life you can turn to music when you're feeling down. It's going to bring you up and make you feel better. But you can't take a song's lyrics and say, I'm going to live that way, you know. So my parents instilled that in me. And so with the fact that I realized that and knew it, they let me listen to whatever I wanted to.
That's cool. My parents were always like that. Yeah, right, my parents are still like that, actually. I remember when, for my birthday, I think I turned 8 on my 8th birthday. One of the gifts I got, since one of my mom's friends, she knew that I liked rock music and I was getting into it. That was when I was just getting into it. I got, like, For Those About to Rock by AC/DC, Number of the Beast by Maiden, and Kiss Gold, just the compilation CD, the 2-disc. So I got those and I was starting to get into rock. So they said, hey, why don't we get you American Idiot by Green Day? So I got that and I was playing it. I remember I went out to my mom. I was playing it like on repeat every single day. And I went out to my mom and I said, Mom, what's a crucifix? And she said, where'd you hear that? And I said, well, this one Green Day song, he says, getting my television fix while sitting on my crucifix. I just want to know what that means. And she said, I'm going to take a look at those lyrics when we get home. So she took a look at them. And she brought me downstairs. She said, we're going to be taking that CD. And I said, oh, you know, okay, whatever. I was fine with it because I knew I could, you know, probably get it on iTunes again or whatever.
Right.
And then they came back. They said, you know what? We think you, although you're only eight, we know that you realize that, you know, this is just music and you probably don't even know what half it means anyway. They didn't say that, but, you know, this was obviously what they were thinking. And they ended up letting me keep it. So ever since then, I've never had a single problem with it.
And your parents sound like they're pretty smart, too. And they probably look at that line and said, you know, how many artists throughout the years have just written lyrics that make absolutely no sense as long as they sound good together? You know, Kurt Cobain made a career on it. His lyrics, you know, don't make any sense half the time. Mm-hmm. And it was funny in interviews, he'd say people, you know, he'd get irritated because people would try to read into these lyrics and find out what the inner hidden meaning behind it was. And there really wasn't. He was just putting words together that sounded good.
Yeah, that's basically it. I've heard some pretty crazy ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you are a huge Kiss fan, as everybody knows, and you actually named your son after Ace Frehley, right?
I did.
That's
awesome. When I was a kid, I always said, you know, I'm such a big Kiss fan, you know, if I ever have a son, I'm going to name him Ace. Because in my family, we have a tradition, we name our sons with the letter A. You know, I'm Aaron. I got a brother named Eric, and his name is spelled A-R-I-C-K. You know, my brother's son, his name is Alexander. So my son's name, you know, when it came time to pick it, was, you know, years later, I'm a little bit older, and it's like, well, you know, I always said if I had a son, I'd name him Ace, you know, and here I am, I'm having a son, you know, and it's got to start with an A. And, you know, everybody's like, yeah, I don't know, that's maybe not such a good idea. You don't want to name your kid Ace. And then the more I thought about it was, how many other kids out there named Ace are there going to be? Probably not too many. You know, so it's going to be a good, unique name, and it sounds cool, and it was easy for him to learn how to write when he was a little kid. And
three letters.
So, you know, I just decided, yeah, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to name him Ace, and I'm glad I did, because it in this day and age, you got to do whatever you can to stand out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if people can remember your name, you know, that's the first step in the right direction. So
that's really
good
cool.
Name.
Does he like Kiss?
Yeah, he does.
That's great. It'd be kind of weird if he didn't.
It would be weird. You know, my name's Ace, but I hate Kiss. A few years ago, I took him to see Ace Frehley when he was on tour, and he came here to Nashville, and they were blown away that there was this little kid up in the front row that knew the words to all the songs because he'd been listening to them his whole life.
Wow, that's sweet.
And then we got backstage and got to meet him and everything, and it's like, Ace, meet Ace, you know, and they're like, that's cool. And he took a picture, and Ace Frehley was super cool to us. It was an awesome night.
Nice. Is he a fairly quiet guy?
Here's the thing with Ace Frehley. When I've met him, what I've noticed is that, you know, from all the years of hard rocking, he's a little hard on the hearing, you know? And so, you know, to get in there and talk to him, you got to get, you know, right in on him and stuff. And that's not always comfortable for him either. So you just got to find that in-between space. I've met Ace twice. Got to meet him this last summer when he was coming through. He was at a tattoo convention here in town that I was also appearing at with Crossfire Wrestling. And I happened to run into John Astronomy from Talking Metal podcast.
Nice.
And introduced myself to him. He said he'd heard of the Decibel Geek podcast. You know, Ace Frehley was on his lunch break, so the line was a mile long, you know, 10 minutes before that. And so he said, I'm just sitting there shooting the breeze with Astronomy. And he says, well, you know, you want to meet Ace? And I was like, well, yeah, sure. He'll say, no, man, that's all right, you know. I was like, yeah, you know. So he said, well, come on in. He took me behind the curtain. I just sat down next to Ace and, you know, kind of shot the breeze with him a little bit, was trying to talk to him about the Decibel Geek podcast. But, you know, he was busy. He was, you know, had his lunch going on and stuff. So, but he was super cool and really nice. He took the time to hang out and take a picture of me and stuff with me, even though he was on break. So, you know, that was pretty neat.
That's really cool. I've always wanted to meet Ace and Peter.
Yeah, I've never met Peter, but Ace, I can tell you, he's a real good guy.
I heard from somebody who I had on the podcast, I did like on Creatures of the Night, I did like a Kiss meet and greet special. So like, I think it was like episode 35 or something, where everybody told their meet and greet stories from each member. I thought that'd be kind of cool. And
that is cool. I'd like to hear that one.
Yeah, it's somewhere. I'll link you. But what was it? I can't remember the guy's name at the moment, but he said that Peter, he was like a long lost uncle. And like when you met him, it's like you guys had finally reunited after 10 years, you know. He was very welcoming.
That's cool. Right on. That's the way, you know, you're always scared when you meet somebody you admire, because what if they turn out to be a jerk?
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of worried about that when I did the meet and greet last month, but that was not the case at all. They were great.
No, I think most times, you know, these guys, and I can tell you from working in radio and stuff and meeting a lot of people, they're just normal people just like you and me. They just happen to have, you know, these amazing jobs where they get to entertain millions of people, and millions of people are in love with them because, you know, they provide this great service, which is the entertainment that they give. And so, you know, it's surely a different perspective, but down at the base of it, they're just normal people. And most of the time they just want to get talked to by, you know, like they're normal people. Because, you know, you got to figure if they meet 10 people, you know, how many of those 10 people are just, oh my God, you know, Peter Criss, you're the man. I love you. You know, every song you ever did is my favorite song, you know, and how many people like that they meet all the time. And they're just like, oh, you know, thanks. You know, I appreciate that. Thank you. Uh-huh. Yep. Thank you. Yeah. You know, so if you go talk to them like a normal person, they appreciate that, you know, just like anybody would.
Yeah. It seems like it would probably just go right over their heads.
Yeah, I think so. After a while.
Yeah. Especially, you know, Kiss going for 40 years. I mean, Gene and Paul haven't been in the band every single time, every concert. It must be annoying, but I can tell that they don't take it for granted either, you know?
No, and that's always been the cool thing about Kiss. You know, they recognize their fans, and they know, you know, they catch a lot of grief for putting out so much merchandise. But the thing is with Kiss is that, you know, on the other side of that, there's a lot of fans out there that want Kiss M&Ms or whatever else they can get their hands on. You know, I might think it's goofy and over the top, but there's people out there that eat it up and love it, you know, and love Kiss. And Kiss has always come back, and they've always been appreciative to the fans. And I think that's, you know, goes a long way to having such a strong following as they do. You know, they've never really, you know, they've done some things over the years that the fans don't really like. But overall, they've always been gracious, and they have always been appreciative of all the fans have, you know, given them. And the fans are appreciative in turn of all the great music over the years they've gotten from Kiss. So it's give and take, and it works out good for everybody, I guess.
Yeah, it's great. And I'm one of those people who thinks it's goofy, but I'll still buy it anyway because it's Kiss. So
right. Yeah, I'm that way sometimes, too. Depends on what it is.
Yeah. I'd mentioned a little bit earlier about Peter Criss, like the guy found that he was like a long lost uncle or something. And that reminds me of something I wanted to say. You were saying how you bought the LPs from your uncle for like $1 a piece. That's funny because my first LPs, I mean, I had maybe one or two, but no player. I actually got a record player and a whole box of rock LPs from my uncle over the summer. And there's Blizzard of Oz was in there, some stuff from Boston.
Right on.
Some Maiden, lots of great LPs, some, you know, ZZ Top, Skynyrd, a lot of great stuff. So like, uncles are good for that.
Heck yeah, they are really good. Yeah. I'll just take the time right now to thank my Aunt Pam and my Uncle Bruce for, making me who I am, because they really did.
Absolutely. What do you think, since we're a little bit on the topic of Kiss, are you one of those people that is up in arms about them not being in the Rock Hall of Fame?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Kiss, there's so many bands that are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that, you know, Kiss is so much better than.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just saying, you know, that's not even saying, you know, look at all the millions of albums they've sold, you know, look at their longevity, look at, you know, the tours, look at all they've accomplished, you know, and this is just saying it as a fan, you know. There's 100 bands in the Hall of Fame right now that Kiss blows away completely. And, you know, it's not right. It's just not right. I mean, I don't know what the deal is. You know, there's bands nominated this year. I mean, Rush, that's great. You know, they should be in there. They should have been in there a long time ago, but not before Kiss, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, Kiss took them out on their first tour.
Right, exactly. You know, so there's bands already in there. There's something, you know, and someday I think that, I hope that story comes out of what it was that has kept Kiss out of the Hall of Fame all these years. Because Chris and I talked about it one time on the show where, you know, is it possible that, you know, somebody that's got a lot of pull within the Hall of Fame met one of the members of Kiss or met the band Kiss at one point and just didn't hit it off or things went wrong somehow, you know, and that guy went back and said, that band will never be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. As long as I'm alive, that band will never be in the Hall of Fame. You know, that's all I can figure. Otherwise, you know, common sense would say Kiss would have been in a long time ago.
Yeah, it's an outrage to Kiss fans. I mean, I remember a couple of months ago I heard that Green Day was doing the opening, they were doing like the speech for Guns N' Roses being inducted. And my first thought was, like, why is this just happening now? You know?
Right. I mean, you know, even Guns N' Roses, you know, and they should be in there too, but not before Kiss. I mean, and I love GNR. You know, I totally, wholeheartedly agree that, you know, that original band deserves to be, you know, and when I say that, I'm talking about Guns N' Roses. You know, not the Axl Rose band of today.
The
I'm
real
talking about
ones.
Guns N' Roses. They should be in the Hall of Fame. Before Kiss? No way.
No. Yeah, I just think it's definitely an outrage. There's protests. I mean, all this stuff. And I think ABBA's, like, in the Hall of Fame. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they are. You know, and even at that, you know, and again, going back to rap, and I don't have nothing against rap music or people that listen to it, but, you know, NWA and Public Enemy are up for nomination in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Maybe they should just change it to the Music Hall of Fame, you know, call it what it is. You know, because if it was the Rock Hall of Fame, one, Kiss would have been in there 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And two, you know, ABBA and NWA is you know, big and influential as bands are, they're not rock bands.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Hall of Fame's perspective of what rock and roll is so warped that, you know, you can't take it seriously. I mean, it is what it is. It was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that actually meant something at one time. But in this day and age, I don't think it really means nothing. I mean, if it really meant something, Guns N' Roses would have surely pulled it together as the original band and at least made an appearance. If it was that big of a deal, they would have done it.
It is Axl we're talking about, though.
Right. You know, but even at that, you know, if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was that important, they would have pulled it together. But it is what it is. Nobody cares about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because it's diluted. So if we don't show up together, if I don't show up at all, you know, big deal. Who cares? It's just the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And that's a shame because that actually meant something at one time, you know, to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, that really meant something. And now it's diluted to the point that everyone's just like, you know, who cares?
It seems to me like they're looking at rock as in, like, you see, you know, a certain kind of, let's say you see a cool plant. You say, wow, that rocks. Maybe you can say that ABBA's music rocks, but it's not rock music.
Yeah, they'll start inducting plants before they, like, kiss in.
Seriously. It's crazy. And actually, speaking of bands,
you know, it's too bad because the Hall of Fame did it to themselves.
They did. Is Aerosmith in there?
Are they? I would guess that they probably are.
Well, I guess that would bring us to, you're aware of the beef between Paul and Steven Tyler, right?
No, not really. I mean, I read something recently about Steven Tyler calling Kiss a cartoon band or a comic book band or something like that, but I wasn't aware of any animosity between the two.
Yeah, it's not really animosity. It's just Steven Tyler seems to be getting pretty upset. It's like one of those things where he's upset that Paul isn't freaking out because he called them a cartoon rock band. Then Paul came back and fired some shots on Rockline a few nights ago on Monday. And then Steven Tyler starts tweeting, you know, kiss my ass to Kiss on Twitter and all this. And they've been going back and forth. I think it's so childish. It's embarrassing.
Well, the thing with Aerosmith and Kiss is you got to remember these guys came out at right about the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and at the time that Kiss was taking over the world, you know, Aerosmith was pretty big too. And while they were both rock bands, you know, hard rock bands, they were competition to each other, big time. You know, they were, you got arguably in that point, like the early 70s, let's say early to mid 70s, they were the biggest bands in the world, the two rock bands. You know, they were tops. So there's always been that little competition between the two bands, as you would expect. And, you know, it's funny that it still goes on to 2012 like that, you know, where Aerosmith's putting out a new Kiss, or new album. Kiss just put out a new album. You know, so it's like everybody's always trying to one-up each other. You know, my question is now that Kiss has put out a new album, when's the new Ace Frehley one coming out? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, it's like a weird coincidence. In 2009, when Sonic Boom came out, Anomaly, I think, came out a little bit before that, and now...
Yeah, Anomaly came out. It was like Ace announced that he finally pulled it together and was going to come out with a new album, and he was really proud of it. And, you know, there's a lot of people were talking that it was going to be really good. And then the next thing you knew, Kiss announced, hey, we're coming out with a new album, too.
Yeah.
So then it was kind of like the competition between the two, which both were great albums. I love Sonic Boom, and Anomaly was, I love it. You know, just a killer album. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking this time, you know, Kiss just came out with one. You know, I think it's time for Ace to come out with one, too. I'm ready for it. I don't know about anybody else, and I'm sure everybody else is, too, because the last one was good. This one's probably even better.
Yeah, and the weird part about it is that Peter announced his book, I think, officially. I know he's been going on about it since the 80s, but he actually officially announced it, I think, in July, and now it's coming out. Let's see, what is today? It's coming out on Tuesday. And Kiss just released their album, so it's like, what's next? You know, a new Vinnie Vincent album or what?
I wouldn't hold your breath for that one.
Yeah, I'm not expecting that. It'll be like $10,000.
Good one, Cassius. Good one. That's funny.
Yeah, Vinnie Vincent. Are you guys doing any more Vinnie Vincent specials?
You know, I don't know. The Vinnie Vincent thing was kind of Chris's baby. You know, he had all that going on. And really, the Vinnie Vincent thing kind of was, in a way, a birth to into the Decibel Geek podcast, because, as the story goes, Chris had enough interviews put together and enough information that he could actually wrote a book on Vinnie Vincent.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it came down to it, you know, for whatever reasons, he decided not to and was going to, you know, release the interviews. And that kind of segued into the Decibel Geek podcast in kind of a way. But the Vinnie Vincent episodes always get, you know, great reviews. People are so interested in Vinnie Vincent. And, you know, my thing is I'm a big Kiss fan. You know, I like Vinnie Vincent. I love Vinnie Vincent's guitar playing, you know, his contributions to the band Kiss. Even a lot of his solo stuff is really good, and I like that. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that he was even living, you know, in the same county as me. And I had no idea until that whole crazy story came out. And, you know, so we're both Kiss fans. We're both Vinnie Vincent fans. You know, Chris he does it because there's stories to be told, and people want to tell their stories. So, you know, why not? You know, why not sit down with them and let these people tell their stories? It's about Vinnie Vincent, which, on the flip side of that, people love Vinnie Vincent and are interested in Vinnie Vincent. He's because he's mysterious and he's enigmatic, where, you know, you think you know Vinnie Vincent, but you really don't, because there's not a lot out there about him. And that's because he don't want a lot about himself out there.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure you probably don't appreciate the podcast about him. But, you know, it's all done in a respectful way, I think, you know, and especially because, you know, we are fans of Vinnie Vincent, and we're doing it because the fans want to know more about him. So why not put it out there for them? If, you know, these people want to come forth, tell the stories, these people want to hear the stories, well, we're just there putting them together. Me personally, I'd love to have Vinnie Vincent on the show. You know, I'd love to be able to sit down with Vinnie and let him tell his side of the story. And we've said it, you know, numerous times on the show that, you know, we would be respectful of Vinnie Vincent, you know, because he deserves to be treated with respect for who he is and what he's done. And, you know, we'd be able to help him tell his story as a way to get it out there, clear the air on some of these, you know, things that other people have said about him that seem a little unsavory at times. But, you know, will he ever do it? Well, who knows? I never thought I'd be interviewing Whitfield Crane from Ugly Kid Joe, so never say never.
Yeah, that would be so cool. His first interview, you know, probably since, like, the mid-80s. That would be fantastic. You
know? And Vinnie Vincent, if you're going to do an interview, who better to do it with than the Decibel Geek podcast? You know, we've been covering you all along, you know, and like I said, we love you, man. You know, we want you to come on the show. So come on the show.
I think he should. That would be very strange for me if some long-lost Kiss member, I'm sitting there and he's showing up, you know, an hour away from me or however close he is. That would be quite a shock.
It's a pretty neat feeling because, you know, like I said, I had no idea. You know, but that's Nashville for you.
Yeah. So talking about radio, how long were you in radio?
Let's see. I was in radio, I guess, about 4 or 5 years. 4 or 5 years I did it, from walking in, you know, not having any experience whatsoever to, you know, being number one in my night shift, you know, that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed my time in radio.
Did you do all local stuff?
Yeah, you know, the story with radio starts like this. I was actually, you know, like I said, I had no experience in radio whatsoever. I was working a different job. I was, you know, helping my mom pay rent at a place that we were staying in. And I had just lost my job. I don't remember what it was. I had probably laid off or something, you know. Surely it had nothing to do with me. But I'd gotten laid off, and I was driving home in my car listening to the radio thinking, boy, my mom's going to be upset. You know, what am I going to do? You know, I got to find another job. And the advertisement came on the radio that they were looking for, you know, part-time announcers. And I thought, well, you know, I could go apply for that. I'm never going to get it, obviously, but I'll go apply for it. I'll tell my mom applied at the radio station. It'll buy, she'll be impressed with that. Think that's cool. It'll buy me a little extra time to find a job. Maybe she'll cut me a break on the rent. So I go to the radio station and I say, hey, you know, and I introduce myself and I said, you know, what do I got to do to apply? And he said, the guy said, well, fill out this application and make a tape of yourself. And I said, well, a tape of myself, you know, like what? He's like, well, reading something. I said, what, like a newspaper article or something? He's like, yeah, whatever, you know. And it was the rock station that I assumed I was applying for. So I went and got a copy of Metal Edge magazine and read an article about Ozzy Osbourne and filled out the application and ran the tape and everything right back over there. You know, I didn't wait till the next day or nothing. I went home, did it, and ran it right back. Huh. And the guy said, well, hang on, stay here for a second. He left me in the lobby and went up to his little office. Came back down and said, when can you start? And I was just like, wow, you know, I can start right now if you want me to. And he's like, well, you know, you don't need to punch in or nothing, but let me start showing you, you know, some of the equipment and some of the stuff you're going to be doing. So it started out with, there was two stations up there. There was WMZK, which is Z104, pure rock Z104, Central Wisconsin's number one rock station. And then there was WJMT, which was Merrill, Wisconsin's local news and information station, a little town in central Wisconsin. And I started out on there and we did like Swap Shop and I played this awful slow music, you know, like ABBA and stuff like that I had to play. And, you know, the music was awful, but the audience was, you know, older people. I think the people in like the old folks' homes were listening to this station and, you know, they'd call in the morning and say, I'd like to wish happy birthday to so-and-so, you know, and I'd put that on the air and it was very, very local. And, then from there, eventually from getting better at being on the air, then I got my break on Z104, which then I was just doing weekends and, got to do a lot of great stuff working weekends. And then eventually got to the point where there was kind of a revolving door on the night shift. And eventually, you know, I stuck around long enough to get my shot. And I took it and did great with it. And this got the show to be better than it had been in years, you know, with countless different people before me. And was doing some stuff back then that you just can't get away with on radio nowadays. You know, and we always joke around and do the Radio Sucks radio shows.
Yeah.
But deep down we know that DJs nowadays, they can't play what they want. You know, they just can't. They get fired. You know, me on the other hand back then, being it was a small market, and this was back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I was able to get away with quite a bit. You know, I brought in my own CDs sometimes, and I played requests. I was the first one to ever play Korn on the radio in Central Wisconsin. And a lot of bands like that, you know, I'd play Pantera, you know, on the radio and I'd get in trouble for it. I'd tell the story on Decibel Geek podcast. You'd play a song off the Ace Frehley solo album and you'd wait for the phone would light up and it'd be one of two things. It'd either be somebody saying, man, that's amazing. You know, I can't believe you played that on the radio. You're the best DJ ever. I love your show. Or it'd be somebody that was my boss going, what are you doing? So, you know, and guys just can't get away with that nowadays. But, yeah, my time on radio was fun. I got to do a lot of cool stuff. I was in a race, with actual cars. I was in a race, and I got to meet Ted Nugent and David Lee Roth and a bunch of other guys, Cinderella, all kinds of cool bands. Just got to do cool stuff all the time. The pay was terrible. But, you know, the perks made it worthwhile, I think. And I miss working on radio. I especially miss the fans, the rock fans up in central Wisconsin, because they were the ones that made working on radio up there so amazing, because they were so much fun and interactive. You know, that's the different thing about the podcast, too. You know, unless you decide that you're going to go live at a certain time every week, you don't really get the interaction with the listeners like you do on radio, where you can just say on the radio right now, hey, call me up in the station and we're going to talk about this. Yeah. You know, and all the phone lines all light up and everybody's got a story to tell. And that's what I liked loved about working on radio too, was just opening up the phone lines and letting people tell stories. You know, just letting people tell stories, just like the Vinnie Vincent thing. These people had a story to tell. The listeners out there wanted to hear it. It all worked out great. You know, and I was just good at being the middleman, letting the people tell their stories, and then playing some killer rock and roll in between. So, yeah, I loved working on radio.
That sounds like it was awesome.
But I'm starting to love podcasting even more.
Yeah, it's great. It must feel so cool to be able to play whatever you want and not getting that angry call from your boss.
Exactly. Now yeah. All I got to worry about is getting happy emails from listeners that say, man, I can't believe you played that, and oh, that was a great song. I never heard that before. And hey, thanks for turning me on to this band I never listened to before, but now are my new favorite band. You know, and stuff like that, that makes it totally worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I just had one of those moments. I forgot what I was going to say, but it happens.
Aaron, it does happen to me all the time. I'm lucky that Chris Zinzak is such a top-notch editor. Otherwise, I'd be a wreck every week on the podcast.
Yeah, well,
I'm always messing up.
I don't edit this one, so people get to see my moments.
Right on. Well, so far, so good. We ain't messing it up too bad.
Awesome. Well, hey, Aaron, we've reached the hour mark. That's usually where I take it. I want to thank you for being on the show. I had a blast.
Right on. I appreciate it. Let me do a couple of quick plugs while I'm on here, and I got all your listeners paying attention. We do the Decibel Geek podcast every single week. As I said, we're in our little world, our little local music scene, which is hard rock and heavy metal. You guys are our worldwide audience. Tune in with us every single week. Hit up the Facebook page. You know, let us know what you're thinking, what you want us to play, because we'll take requests and everything else. Check us out on the internet. It's www.dbgeekshow.blogspot.com. And we've got a bunch of great artists putting up cool articles and newsworthy things all the time. It's always a good time on the website. And we didn't get to touch on this at all in the interview, but that's okay. It's a totally different subject. I also work with Crossfire Wrestling. We are about to become the biggest, newest, heaviest thing in professional wrestling in the country today, you know, and we're going to have a new TV show coming out nationwide very soon. But on November 3rd in Nashville, Tennessee, we've got our huge first ever television taping. So if you live in the Nashville area and you love pro wrestling, you can check out more about that at www.crossfirellc.vze.com. So if you're a wrestling fan, check that out. If you're a rock fan, check out the Decibel Geek podcast. And Cassius, man, thank you for having me on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Mr. Simmons. That was great. No.
Well, you know, that's the way it goes. You know, when you get a little bit older and you're busy all the time, you want everybody to know about all the cool stuff you're doing. So that's what I got for you.
That's all good. And I hope everybody goes to check it out.
At least I'm not trying to sell, you know, Aaron Camaro M&Ms.
Or coffin.
Not yet, my friend. Not yet.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of That Reporter Kid Speaks. I really hope you guys enjoyed it, and it feels great to be back pumping these out for you guys. Please check out ThatReporterKid.com for all the latest episodes. It links to the Podomatic page. Every episode I've put out so far on this podcast is there, so I highly recommend you check that out. If you're a KISS fan, as we talked about a lot today in the podcast, check out my KISS podcast, Creatures of the Net, at creaturesofthenet.com. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter at That Reporter Kid. And thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm That Reporter Kid saying, rock on. Show! Congratulations, you listened to the whole episode. You win a cookie.